This is a podcast from Consilio. We bring people together to create better places.
Hello and welcome to Better Places, the podcast from Consilio, where we talk property, planning and politics from across the capital. I'm Luke Francis.
And I'm Nathan Parsad Wyatt.
Our last one of 2023.
The last one of 2022.
Well, yeah.
You're a year ahead.
It's been a long year. I'm living in the future.
It's been a long year, but not that long. But yeah, this is the last episode before Christmas, and we've got a great guest, the first directly elected mayor of Croydon, Jason Perry, who joins us for an interview shortly. We actually recorded it a month ago before Croydon declared for the third time it was filing for bankruptcy. But
third time in 2 years.
Yeah. So, which I think is all legacy stuff largely, but it's still not great for the mayor of Croydon. So we did have a chat with the mayor about that though, and touched on some of the financial challenges they were facing. When we spoke to him, it was just before a budget meeting they were having, and the latest bankruptcy notice was issued. So anyway, we talk a little bit about that. We talk about planning and development and what he sees has historically been wrong about development in Croydon, and kind of what he would like to see. But it was a really interesting conversation with obviously the first person to take on that role, and in a slightly odd dynamic as well, where, you know, he is the Conservative mayor directly elected, but obviously doesn't have an inbuilt majority on the council. So we talk a little bit about that as well, and how he's coping with the having to work cross-party on some of these issues, actually. So good conversation. But before we get to that, as we said, this is the last one before Christmas, but some good news for Consilio. Luke Francis, although he's a bit shy, was recently promoted to head of London. So, Luke, what does that mean?
Finally. It's a really good question. It means we have to reprint all of the business cards.
Does anyone still use business cards anymore?
I hope so, because we just ordered a couple of thousand. So if you would like a business card, do get in touch. You will need to cover the postage.
But no, what does it mean?
Well, I think it reflects the fact that we're growing as a team. We're working in, I think this year we worked in 25 London boroughs. Is that right?
Yeah, 25.
25, seven to go.
Well, I think historically we're up to 30, actually, out of the 32. So there aren't many.
It does beg the question. Which are the two?
Well, let's focus on the 30 that we have worked in, shall we?
Yeah, that's very fair. But no, so, you know, I think as we are, you know, find ourselves growing as a team, we're working in almost every London borough. We wanted a role to sort of oversee that and continue to direct the work we're doing and take a pan-London view of what's going on. But that's very exciting, just in time for Christmas.
Yeah, really exciting news. And as Luke says, I think it will continue to build on the fact that we're, you know, working across virtually every borough now. So anyway, watch this space for 2023. The team's never been bigger, and you know, hopefully it's going to continue to grow.
Fingers crossed.
So we're also recording this remotely because it's a snow day, which is making me feel very festive, actually. So there are
I must say, this is the most festive I've felt all year.
That's what happens when it snows. Everything stops working.
The city grinds to a standstill, yeah. But no, it's we're recording remotely because you're snowed into your house.
Yeah, literally can't open the door. No, it's not quite that bad. But yeah, so what's been going on? So we reached the end of the year. I've read yesterday that Rishi Sunak has lasted longer than Liz Truss did as Prime Minister. So that's
good news.
First big achievement, I think. Beat 46 days, I think it is. But anyway, so the wonder you thought it was 2023, given the fact that we've had three Prime Ministers this year, and it has seemed like a pretty long year. But
it does feel like it's really stretched out, 2022.
I think for those of us into planning and development, which hopefully is everybody listening, otherwise why would you be listening to Better Places? It is a bit of a disappointing end to the year in terms of government reform on this issue. I mean, we've had, I think, the promise of planning reform now for many years. Rob Jenrick did, I think, what most people would say was a pretty good stab at piecing together those, you know, a good white paper on how we might accelerate development and particularly development of housing, move to a more zonal system and one that might actually, you know, reduce some of the burdens and delays. I think we then had all of that slightly watered down. We briefly had the idea of investment zones under Liz Truss, which were going to liberalise planning rules, which were very, very short-lived. I mean, I think civil servants barely printed off the investment zone application form before that was put back on the shelf by the new government. And then we had Gove say that he was going to be quite ambitious on housing. And then, unfortunately, a group of backbench Conservative MPs immediately sort of torpedo any prospect of that actually happening for fear that, that this would mean unpopular developments in their backyard. And
So just explain the politics of it a bit. Just, you know, I think because this is an overtly political decision, right?
I think so. So I think in a nutshell, there's a lot of Conservative MPs across the country, but particularly in the southeast, those outer boroughs in London and surrounding, who feel that, you know, that is where most of these homes would, you know, want to be built. That's where the market is saying they should be built in a lot of cases. And obviously local politicians, local councils, local councillors, and indeed local members of parliament are getting quite a lot of stick for these developments from a lot of people who think maybe the infrastructure hasn't quite been put in place. You know, it brings a lot more traffic to their roads and it's difficult to manage and all the sort of quite difficult challenges for locals to overcome. I think that's obviously balanced against the need for additional housing and the fact that we do have a housing crisis and we haven't for many years under successive governments been building the number of houses that we need. And that kind of what that's led to is that backlash resulting in a fear from a lot of MPs that they will be on the wrong side of local campaigns against particular developments. And, you know, in politician style, the first thing they care about, and I do understand this, is whether or not it impacts their votes. And at a time where, you know, the Conservatives nationally aren't riding high in the polls, Conservative MPs are very focused on these local issues, and some of those are going to be opposing particular developments. So they're worried, basically, that a lot of unpopular developments will be built in their areas. That will cost them votes. That will then cost them the election. And therefore, there should be better tools available to block these developments. So I think when Gove went into the levelling up department, there was quite a lot of optimism that maybe he'd be quite radical, as he has been in other departments, and he would kind of really grasp this issue, tackle it. And, you know, I think everybody accepts the fact that, well, most people accept the fact that we do need to build more homes. But unfortunately, he sort of wrote a letter to MPs effectively saying that housing targets would be an advisory starting point, that it would basically be up to local authorities to determine how many homes can actually be built. There was some liberalisation on whether any of the greenbelt would need to be reviewed to take on that additional housing. And the final kind of bit was about, you know, councils might be able to cite the character of an area as a constraint to particular development. So I think essentially any hope that there would be national policies to help accelerate the numbers have kind of been watered down, is the impression I get. And I think it's really disappointing, but, you know, the first rule of politics is being able to count. And it was obviously very clear that he wouldn't be able to get those reforms past the Conservative Parliamentary Party.
But there, you know, so the flip side of it was that the Labour Party were, you know, willing to offer their support to get this over the line, which, you know, from a purely political perspective was a really smart move. I think it put the Labour Party in a good place. It made the Prime Minister look weak. But from a long-term addressing the demand for more housing, addressing the need for more housing, this feels like a really worrying move, because the world that we operate in, we know that there is often some community concern when new developments are proposed. People tend not to, particularly in London, densities, heights are very contentious, and often it is cited that these sort of developments change the identity of an area. But one of the things that can often drive pragmatism in otherwise potentially anti-development boroughs is housing delivery targets and local authorities knowing that they need to deliver a certain number of units in order to reach that target. And actually, if they fall too far below it, then they are put in presumption, as we've seen with a couple of local authorities across the capital, where decision-making power essentially, you know, goes to central government. And this feels like a worrying move, because it will become much easier to bend to the will of a potentially a vocal minority who don't like development. And as you say, it becomes a political decision rather than the greater good.
I think it's opened up. So it's opened up a fault line that has been starting to emerge within the Conservative Party, for sure, among, you know, a younger generation of Conservatives and a group of Conservatives who I very much think that we need to build a lot more homes, and we need to do this in places where people actually want to live. And, you know, that means there's going to have to be an element of compromise from those people who perhaps already live in certain communities. But, you know, it's a fundamental Conservative value to own your own home. And, you know, we should be doing all we can to get the next generation to be able to achieve that. So I think that on the one side, you've got that. And on the other side, you do have Conservative existing homeowners to some extent who are very much of the view that they've probably seen their house price increase in value over many years and actually don't necessarily consider this to be a priority. And I think that fault line definitely exists within the Conservative Party. And I suspect, given where house prices have gone over the last few years, although there is some tapering off now, that fault line may start to open up within politics generally. And I think Labour have clearly identified that the side of that argument that they want to be on by offering to support the reforms, and get almost, you know, had the government wanted to, they probably could have passed some of these reforms with Labour votes, which wouldn't have been a good tool for Conservative management, but ultimately may have got the outcome that's required. So I think it is a disappointing way to end the year, because I just feel like this issue is always going to some extent go round in circles.
It does, you know, it feels to me, and it's always difficult to try and predict these things, you know, 18 months out from a general election, but it does feel like housing will be one of the cornerstone campaign, certainly from a Labour Party perspective. I think, you know, a lot has been put out about Labour's aspirations to get, you know, more social homes built, for, you know, to increase home ownership amongst younger people. It does feel like in 18 months' time, especially with, you know, what we've just talked about, and potentially seeing a drop off in the number of permissions being granted, the number of homes being built out, that potentially this becomes one of the fundamental sort of campaign points for the next general election about whether or not we're going to build the homes that people need.
Though I think, to bring it back full circle and back to the conversation that we're about to have with the mayor of Croydon, you know, a large part of the campaign that Jason Perry ran and the Conservative group ran was about actually reversing some of the decisions that Labour had made when it ran Croydon in terms of delivering new homes, delivering higher density, and actually changing the landscape of Croydon in a way that local people potentially didn't like. So I think, in a way, this, to bring it back full circle, it can be a problem for whoever is the decision maker. And I think we've seen similar things across various other London boroughs, whereby, you know, Labour have gone, Labour administrations have gone, you know, gone for large numbers of housing, higher density, higher buildings generally, and actually that's created a huge backlash. And I think that's the thing that a lot of these Conservative backbenchers are fearing. And, you know, this is one of the big challenges. This is almost why I think that Rob Jenrett was onto something when he proposed his reforms, whereby you wouldn't necessarily look on a case-by-case specific development to specific development. You would look at the overall area and actually say, well, where are the parts of the borough that can take additional homes and what should they look like? Mm-hmm. And you almost look at it by looking at the whole thing rather than just specific developments within it. But anyway, frustration aside, I think, you know, there are still a number of pro-development boroughs and pro-development local authorities across the UK. And, you know, I think we've just got to work within the existing framework to deliver as many homes as possible and actually sell the benefits to the communities, which, of course, is what we do here at Consilio. So if you are in need of services. So I guess all that it remains from us to do is wish everybody a Merry Christmas. Or should we do that at the end?
Yeah. We'll do it at the end. We can do it now. There's no point in retracting the Merry Christmas.
Well, we'll do it twice. Well, Merry Christmas, everyone. But before we do that, let's listen to Mayor Jason Perry, the first directly elected Mayor of Croydon.
And I'm delighted now to be joined by the first ever Mayor of Croydon, Mayor Jason Perry. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. So let's start with sort of the job so far. You know, you led a campaign for a referendum previously. I know the Conservatives in Croydon were pushing for that for many years. In 2021, it was established that Croydon would have its first directly elected mayor. And then, of course, in that extraordinary result in May this year, you were the first elected mayor and a Conservative mayor. But it produced something of a constitutional oddity in a way, didn't it? In that you were obviously elected mayor, but there were 34 Labour councillors, two Green councillors and one Lib Dem, and only 33 Conservative councillors. So you don't quite have a majority of councillors, but you do have control of the mayoralty. So how have you found the first 6 months, and how is it working with that kind of mix of political views?
Yeah, the first 6 months has been really good. We've tried to hit the ground running and get some of those election pledges sort of on the table and moving, which has been really good. Being the executive mayor, you know, essentially makes Croydon a Conservative council, being a Conservative mayor. I get added to the Conservative numbers. So we've got 34 Labour, 34 Conservative, the two Greens and one Liberal. And so far, things have worked well. We're trying to get back to a place where there are sort of cross-party discussions behind the scenes. That always used to be the way Croydon worked, but hasn't done in recent years. So we're very much trying to forge links between the parties. And why now meet with the different parties on a cross-party basis, actually ward by ward, to have conversations with them about how things are going. I'm really just trying to engender some common discussions with people.
Very good. So far, so good, I think, is the message.
So far, so good.
So you were elected on a bit of a change mandate, really. You know, you obviously the previous administration had the Section 114 notice, effectively put the council in a lot of financial difficulty. And, you know, one of your big priorities was, you know, to completely sort out that problem and vote for change. And it worked. So what does success look like for you when you go back to the polls next time round, and kind of what are your priorities for the new administration?
As you say, the vote for change was the really big part of this election. Even the move to the mayoral model was part of that vote for change, because, you know, politics and Croydon Council, I think, had become quite toxic in recent years. The bankruptcy of the council, the way planning had been handled in the borough, etc., had become a real issue. So that vote for change is really important. Listening to our residents and actually responding to what they need and what they want is a key priority. I guess what does the mayoralty look like when we go back to the polls is that we have a financially sound council, sustainable local government that we can afford, that we have a town centre that's had the investment it needs, that is looking much healthier, that's bringing jobs back into the local economy and is bringing that inward investment back into our local economy, and that we have clean streets, people are happy to be here, happy to be shopping, we don't have a town centre full of graffiti, and that we're back on the map for the right reasons.
So, you know, absolutely sensible, but we spoke about the sort of state of the finances when you came in, and in recent years in Croydon, and I know recently you've sort of spoken about maybe that the council should be doing a little bit less, but a little bit better. How bad was the situation when you came in, and how difficult is it going to be to fix it? I mean, we've got the national music of, you know, constrained budgets and potentially an element of austerity still to come. Will that be the same on a local level, do you think? Or
it's going to be very difficult for Croydon to get beyond the position that the previous Labour Council have put the town into. You know, we've got £1.5 billion worth of debt as a local authority, with very little assets sitting behind that. And that's costing us £50 million a year in interest payments before we've even opened the doors. So we're in a position where local government in Croydon is just not sustainable going forward. So we need to rectify that problem, and we need to get back to exactly where the solid sort of base of our budget sits. And we've had the opening the books exercise, which has revealed that we've got big issues with housing benefit payments, where we've not been claiming monies back appropriately as a council. We've got income targets which were never achievable. This year we've got another £10 million shortfall in parking income, yet that was in last year's budget as well. But it was brought forward into this year by the previous administration. So we've got a number of areas where it's just not working, and forecasting has been really poor. And we therefore ended up in this position where we've got to seriously change what we're doing as a local authority. We're going to have to shrink as a local authority. We'll have to do less. But what we do well. And in reality, it's going to get worse before it gets better, in order to get back to that path of sustainability.
Short-term pain for long-term gain.
That's certainly my hope, and that's certainly how we're looking to do it. I want to get us back to a solid base, and then we can start to rebuild in a proper, sustainable way and respond to the needs of our local people.
So, you know, a big job for you and the new administration to get back onto that path of sustainability. You've been a councillor, I think, if I'm correct, since 1994. And, you know, but previously have come from a business background. You know, how have those experiences shaped how you're going to tackle this?
As you rightly said, yeah, I've been a councillor since 94, so 28 years as a local councillor. I guess it means I know how local government works. It's not as if I've just kind of parachuted in and I don't really know how the systems work. I know the kind of interplay between local government, national government, and how to respond to our residents. But I also know how Croydon used to work, that Croydon was a good borough. It was a well-run borough under both Conservatives and Labour in years gone by. So I know how it should work, and that's what I want to get Croydon back to. You know, I'm a Croydon boy born and bred, and to see my hometown in the state that it's in now is really upsetting, and it upsets so many of our residents. And, you know, I think back to the halcyon days of kind of North End Croydon, which was the shopping centre of the southeast, and now we have so many closed shops and a shopping centre that really needs investment. And we've just got to, you know, we've just got to do the best we can to get back up there.
What got you into politics in the first place?
I suppose a desire to give back to the local communities, do something for local people. And ever since I became a councillor, it's that kind of casework of dealing with people's council tax or housing benefits or fixing the pothole, whatever it may be. So really just putting back into the local community.
And have you always known you were a Conservative?
Yes.
Unquestionable.
From a young age.
I stepped off the tube here to come to the office today, and obviously part of what I want to talk to you about is about planning and development in Croydon generally. And it's hard, you know, you've been a councillor since 94, you've seen so many changes, but it's hard even, you know, somebody like me walk in, it looks transformational from the way it did even just a few years ago. You've criticised some of that for not being good development in your view, and have obviously sought to change that. And it was a big part of your campaign, you know, Croydon perhaps too densely populated, the character of the area is being slightly eroded, and it has changed in recent years. What planning and development, what do you want to see come forward in Croydon? What does good development look like for you in Croydon?
I think good development is sustainable development, and often we hear about the MPPF and sustainable development, and what's happened in recent years in Croydon is that we've had family homes being knocked down to build blocks of flats, in the suburbs, kind of away from the transport interchanges, away from main bus routes, and it's just not been sustainable development. And what we have, you know, we've got a town centre here in Croydon. There's been a lot of development gone on here, and there's potential for more. We've got district centres where we could be looking at development. We've got great network connections, you know, 15 minutes to London, 15 minutes out to Gatwick, etc. So it's about focusing development where the network is there, where there's the support to handle that development, rather than sort of pushing it into the suburbs of the northeast, south and west of the borough, which is what's been happening in recent years, and been happening in a way that kind of has offended local people. You know, Croydon has got very distinct characters, and they're different. You know, we talk about the 16 places of Croydon, and they're quite different. But what's happened is that the planning in the last 7 or 8 years has actually played no respect to any of those characters, and kind of alien character has just come in and been plonked in the middle of it all. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really offended local people.
And, you know, with that in mind, one of the first big changes that you made, I think less than a week into the job, was to revoke the SPD2 design code, and really, I suppose, set a marker down that this was a change in approach. Do you think that policy was one of the key problems? And do you think that all parties now accept that perhaps that was the wrong policy and has created a lot of this backlash?
Yeah, I wanted to really hit the ground running. So I said that I would revoke SPD2, and I didn't do it in a week, but I started it in a week. So, but we got it revoked in July through full council. So it was really to put that marker down that things were going to be different. And it was that design guide that really drove the... And it was talking about sort of transformation and things like that of the suburbs. What we were actually seeing, an evolution of the suburbs, but what we were actually seeing was a revolution. Hmm. You know, what had happened and what had been for years was just being turned on its head. So it very much drove that design guide, drove that removal of family housing, building blocks of flats, that non-sustainable development. And it made a real change to remove that. And through the election process, the other parties, Labour mainly, also said that they wanted to change the planning process. You know, they had been the guardians of the planning process for the previous 8 years, but their candidates saw that what they had done had caused so much harm to Croydon and had upset local residents so much that they also agreed it needed to change.
It's interesting that there was that cross-party support. It's almost everyone maybe has accepted the argument that it's gone too far one way. So have you already started to see an impact from that change? Obviously, it only just came in July, but in terms of applications coming forward now, do you think the message has been sent to the development community?
Yeah, the message has definitely been sent. I mean, it became active immediately. So any applications that were in the system immediately, you know, this change affected those as well. Planning committee has refused more applications, but the really key thing is that a lot more have been refused under delegated business as well by officers. So our officers are treating applications differently. It has, I guess, sent a message out to developers, and a number of developers have come to see me since, asking about how's things going to move forward, what do we want for Croydon, and we'll be starting a review of the local plan in the very near future, so that we get back to that recognising the character of Croydon. So developers are very much on board, wanting to have that conversation about how do we work together in Croydon, which has been kind of reassuring, really, that we're doing the right thing by the people of Croydon, but also developers are willing to work with us to achieve that.
Yeah, I think, you know, developers and those kind of in the planning world want certainty, basically. So, you know, whatever framework they have to work within. Mm. And it sounds to me that you're committed to working in partnership with developers as well to deliver what it is that you want to see for Croydon. So that's a little bit about, you know, what maybe you don't want to see and what went wrong in the past. You mentioned that the local plan review will be starting shortly. Do you know when, or can you say when? And also, what can we hope to see from that?
I think probably in the new year we will really get moving. We'd already, the previous council had started a review of the local plan, had gone through a consultation process, and that was halted before the election. So it's kind of picking up on where that finished. And I guess it's going to be that focus back on design over density. I think the previous plan was very density driven, and we want that now to be design and character driven going forward. We clearly still have housing targets to meet, that can't be ignored. But we do have a five-year housing supply. We are still doing what we need to do, but it's about redressing the balance. You know, the previous local plan had gone too far in the favour of developers, and we now need to redress that balance. I think sometimes developers kind of became the ogre of the piece, but in reality they were responding to the plan that was before them. So, and I say it's good that we're having those conversations with developers about moving it forward, but it's really that design character being the priority.
So we've got SPD2 gone, review of the local plan coming soon. Design review panel, I understand that you're looking at reforming the existing design review panel and inviting applicants.
Yeah, that's just been done. I mean, it was the place review panel that we used to have that's been running for a few years, and it was due for a refresh. And in so doing, we refreshed it to a design review panel. So again, putting that focus back on the design and character. And that's gone out to advert. So officers are kind of working through that at the moment. But as I've said, and you know, it's just that getting back to character design and respecting what we have here, you know, knowing that it's different in different places and responding and respecting appropriately.
Sure. And are there any other planning policies that you want to introduce in the near future, or do you think it will all be tied up with the local plan?
It will all be tied up through the local plan. So there are other areas. HMOs are becoming a problem in the borough, so we're looking at HMO policies potentially around how we can tighten that up. There are currently intensification zones in the plan, which we will be looking to remove, and various other bits and pieces that we'll be going through, potentially looking at some extra conservation areas and things like that.
Okay, and be remiss of me not to talk about community consultation. Obviously, that's a big part of what Consilio do. You mentioned during the campaign that, you know, there was no point in consulting if you're not prepared to actually listen to what residents are saying. What do you want to see from developers, planners, from anybody consulting in Croydon? How do you want to see that done? Do you want to see it done early, genuinely, with not a blank sheet of paper, but with clear guidance on, you know, red lines and what areas they can influence? I mean, what's best practice for you?
I think consultation is really important, and early engagement is really important, and kind of being honest with residents about what developers are thinking about. But I think for me, if consultation is real and we really believe in it, something will change. And I've seen far too many consultations where we've gone through the whole process and nothing changes at the end, which to me says you're not listening to what people are saying. And that was a big part of the campaign, was the listening to the Croydon residents, understanding what they wanted. So I would hope that any early engagement would see genuine change around what comes forward. You know, not every resident is going to be happy with every planning application. But if we can get to a point where most residents are happy, or they can understand why something's being done in a particular way, then, you know, we should hopefully be in a happier place.
So priorities coming forward in the not too distant future, away from planning, but just generally, have you got a big policy agenda that you're planning to announce quite soon, or any big changes that are coming down the track?
We've just got the Mayor's Business Plan, which is kind of the corporate plan for the borough for this period up to the next election. And that really is focusing, number one, on fixing the finances, but then looking at how we create, you know, a clean environment where business wants to invest, where we can create jobs for people, looking after our young, celebrating the achievements of our young, looking after our old, and making sure that we can have healthy lives. So that's going to Cabinet next week. So that's going to be our plan for the next 3.5 years now. So that's just going through at the moment. So it's really dealing with all those issues around planning, cleaning the streets. You know, Croydon has had issues with knife crime and dealing with those and youth violence that's happened in the borough and diverting youth away from those activities. And housing, major issue, Regina Road hit the news, and sort of 18 months later, nothing really happened for those people. Mm. So we're just about to start the consultation about what we do with the Regina Road estate, whether we refurb, whether we redevelop. And again, that will be a consultation with residents that will start, what starts directly after the cabinet meeting next week. So there's lots of change ahead and hopefully lots of change for the better.
And it sounds to me like the key message is basically a return to just, you know, competent, solid local government.
That's the plan.
So one last question for me that I always ask everyone who comes on the podcast. If you know, there'll be lots of developers listening, lots of planners listening, lots of people in the sort of built environment community listening. What's your one message to them as mayor?
Croydon is open for business. Croydon wants inward investment. But Croydon is a great place with great character, and we need to respect that character as we build Croydon back for the future.
Mayor Perry, Jason Perry, thanks very much for speaking to us today.
Thank you.
Well, that's it from us. Thanks for listening to another episode of Better Places, the last one of 2022. Wishing you all a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.